through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome back into Jake and Stacy. Time for a look at the Seahawks, that OC search, everything else about the championship round. Joining us right now for that preview, Mina Kimes, ESPN analyst and host of the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. Hey, Mina, how are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Before we start with any of the serious questions, maybe the most serious question I need to ask is whether or not you heard that Dan Campbell sound this morning and what you thought of it. I have to assume you did.
Well, I actually saw it for the first time while we were taping Highly Questionable today, which is, so they played the video and got our natural reaction, which I guess I would describe as, speaking for myself personally, as something between horror, amazement, confusion, and wanting to run through a wall.
That's what I said.
Also feeling like maybe I should call the cops. I don't know. Man, that is a lot. Guys, Jake, you know, coaches say wild stuff, but biting the kneecap? Biting?
I have yet to hear a motivational speech
this
pregame.
This is the best one I've heard.
Talking about not only biting one kneecap, two kneecaps.
Both.
And then going after and getting a hunk out of somebody's midsection. I mean, that's pretty aggressive, Mina.
Even my dog wouldn't bite a kneecap. Like, you only got two of them. I don't know. I mean... Listen, I know. I figure we're going to talk a little bit about the coordinators. I'll say this with head coaches. I get asked all the time this time of year, what do you think of this hire? It's really hard to tell because being a head coach in the NFL, it's such a complicated job. In many situations, it's much more about being like a CEO type almost and overseeing your coordinators and assistants. So I try not to make bold predictions, good or bad, and just kind of look at what we know based on past performance. But that was unusual. I'll just say that.
I would say so as well. And Mina, it probably doesn't help when the narrative out there about Eric Bieniemy right now is the fact that, hey, what I'm hearing right now is this guy just doesn't interview very well. And you hear Dan Campbell in his opening presser say that, and you're wondering, well, what did he do in his interview that just wowed them over? Talking about kneecaps? That's what got the Detroit Lions ownership going?
Apparently not enough implied cannibalism is really all I got for you. It's funny because some of the coaches, Robert Saleh is hired, you know, by the Jets, and we see a lot of him. He's clearly beloved by his players and a hype man on the sidelines. But Bieniemy, for example, he's beloved by his players too. Heck, I've heard from Kansas City Chiefs how much they love this dude. So, as far as the interview process goes, I truly don't know what different ownership groups or whatever are looking for. All we can do is look at these guys and their record of success or lack of success with the teams that they're coming from.
Mina, when it comes to the offensive coordinator and the search here in Seattle, what should be the priority in mind for Pete Carroll and the Seahawks?
Don't forget to tell Mina who you recommended.
Well, I was recommending. People were actually talking about you, Mina.
Unprompted, Jake said this.
People were talking about you, Mina. People are very highly, they think highly of you. I thought that maybe you'd probably be too busy with your new gig, that you wouldn't want to leave that. So maybe that leaves Seattle with the possibility of landing Lenny.
Lenny would be a bold choice. Not going to lie. Even Lenny, like I said, though, he's not biting kneecaps. So I don't know. He has the proper aggression that NFL coaches want. And he also, he does run the ball and lacks the ability to throw it. So Pete Carroll might be interested. But for me personally, I would say my number one priority, and I think I can sum this in three words, not Adam Gase. Are three words that I would pinpoint. Beyond that, I've heard the same names thrown around as everyone else, whether it was, you know, former head coaches like Doug Peterson, Andy Lynn, young guys like Mike Kafka, who's the quarterback coach in Kansas City, Pep Hamilton from, you know, LA. And I think there's no name to me that is a clear standout. To me, it's much more about a set of priorities, thinking through what went wrong with the offense in the second half of last season, and can we bring in someone who not only can fix those things, and we can talk about sort of the issues, but also has a willingness to make those sorts of adjustments on the fly, which is frankly what I think was lacking with this offense. So, you know, there's so many problems with Seattle's offense. It's such a complicated stew. It wasn't as simple as run the ball more, pass the ball more. We need a quick passing game. Whereas, you know, obviously we have to figure out ways to tackle cover too. It goes to also to personnel and overall philosophy. But my hope is that they find an offensive coordinator who is adaptable and inventive more than anything.
Is there any, like you said, there are numerous things that go into that. We've all talked about a lot of them. Is there one or two you think we don't talk about enough that you've started to focus on now that some of the loss in the playoffs and then obviously the second half of the season has kind of settled in?
Names? Yeah. Look, I like some of the names I mentioned. I mean, Kafka would be fantastic based on what we've seen in Kansas City. I think Pep Hamilton also did a really nice job with Herbert, and we know him from Indianapolis. He actually was really good in the XFL too, which is something I actually watched. But, you know, beyond that, I actually wonder if perhaps rather than an NFL retread, there might be someone in the college ranks. We're not seeing names thrown around, but I was really heartened when I heard Tony Elliott, and that's not happening from Clemson. But I think, again, with inventiveness and creativity being what I think are the most important qualities, sometimes with the NFL you have to kind of dip down to find that. So that would have been interesting to me. But look, it really is about it's a collective effort. It's not just about someone coming in and saying, hey, maybe we need to unlock this part of the playbook that, you know, hasn't really been a part of the offense. It's about the team, the general manager and the head coach recognizing let's all move in the same direction on this and realize this is how we can get back to, you know, not being an unmanageable third downs. And this is how we can have a more balanced offense, which doesn't just mean running the ball and passing. I think that's a common misinterpretation of the word balance. It also means, hey, let's use all three levels of the field, which is something that Seattle was lacking.
Yeah, it certainly was, Mina, and that's a very great point that you make there. One of the other things that stands out to me right now, Mina, you talk about everybody being on the same page, is we heard national media kind of talking and pointing correlation to there potentially being a situation where there's actually comparisons of, in the future, maybe of what Houston is going through right now and the Seattle Seahawks go through in terms of not organizational disasters. I don't think the Seahawks would ever be in that same category, but in terms of potentially having two franchise quarterbacks wanting out. Could you see that on the potential horizon?
Golly, I hope not. I mean, I'll say this about Houston that makes it, I think, a different situation, and is, you know, I've been around that team and reported on those players. That has as much to do with ownership and culture as anything. And I don't think that's a problem in Seattle. I'll say this. Like, you know, there is, I understand there's a lot of concerns about whether or not Pete Carroll, the head coach, has it. I'm on Seattle radio. As a overemphasis on, you know, taking care of the football and running it, and philosophically whether, you know, was he overreaching in terms of trying to have the offense look a certain way. But that's so minimal compared to what happened in Houston, which was much more like Deshaun Watson didn't, let me put it this way, when they traded DeAndre Hopkins, Deshaun Watson wasn't making a note more noise about it. I mean, he signed his big deal after that. He wasn't going public with his dissatisfaction. Frankly, he could have and should have and deserved to. It had to much more to do with disrespect shown to him by the ownership, you know, after he was told he would have a part sort of in the next phases of that organization. And I don't, that doesn't seem to be the case in Seattle. So to me, we're way far off from that type of scenario.
Mina, you had a preview of the upcoming championship weekend on your Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny podcast. When you're looking at these remaining teams, is there any key similarity or have they shown that there are different ways to win?
That's interesting. Well, I mean, passing offense, right. You know, the first, second, third, and fifth ranked in terms of DVOA passing offenses in the NFL. So, and they all, by the way, have, I would say the Bucs have the best defense, but they're not elite defenses. I think the two best defenses, Baltimore and New Orleans, got knocked out. And that certainly tells you something about the modern NFL. Like, Seattle's defense was good enough this year by the end. If the offense had performed, you know, in the second half of the season the way they did in the first half, they'd be a contender, no doubt. You don't need a top-tier defense to compete in the NFL. You just need to be good enough. And, like, in the case of, like, Kansas City, or honestly, frankly, any of these defenses, make a few splash plays, force a few turnovers or what have you. But you got to have an explosive offense. All of these offenses, these four offenses, have that potential. They're built differently, I think. I mean, you can see some similarities between them. They all use a fair amount of play action, for example. I feel like we nerds talk about it too much, but, you know, they're different. Some of them are more dependent on the wide receivers. Some, like in Green Bay, use more of the backs, tight ends, and fullbacks. But the one commonality they all have is that they're explosive, which is, of course, something that was lacking in Seattle at the end.
Mina, what has been so impressive to you when it comes to Aaron Rodgers' resurgence this year? I mean, it, you know, people kind of overlook that as, oh, yeah, of course, he's always been this really talented player. But if you look back on the last 3 years of his career, running Mike McCarthy out of town and not having a very successful year one under Matt LaFleur and seeing all the frustrations that he had during that year, what has impressed you about Aaron Rodgers' season in his second year with LaFleur and obviously under a lot of pressure to perform with given his circumstances with his future?
Well, he's playing in the structure of the offense, which is something that wasn't really the case last year. I mean, every now and then he'll do crazy Aaron Rodgers thing. I think about the throw to Lazard when last week when he was in, basically in his own end zone. That's a freak throw that like four quarterbacks in the NFL make. But for the most part, until that point, Jake, he was averaging like 3 air yards max per attempt. Okay. And this is really, I think, a telling comparison to what we saw from Seattle. The Packers had like the perfect game plan to play the Rams defense. They were, this is a Packers offense that's been super, explosive off of play action, you know, with deep shots. They didn't have a deep shot off of play action until the final Lazard, the touchdown. Rodgers was content to take what was available to him. They were running the ball at will. You saw, you know, little swing passes and tosses and a lot of the things you have to do against that Rams defense. Now I'll add, they were playing a diminished Aaron Donald, which made their life a lot easier, and they have a much better offensive line, particularly in the interior, than Seattle. But I do think it's instructive to look at what Aaron did in that game and then compare it to the week before with Wilson in Seattle against the Rams. And frankly, if you're a Seahawks fan, you should be watching that and thinking, this is what we should have looked like.
Mm. And Mina, you point that out because that's an amazing stat. That's an amazing thought process there that Green Bay was very similar to Seattle in that aspect, that they were a team that took a lot of deep play action shots down the field over the year.
Yeah.
But they go into this game and they change that. Do you think that that's an approach from Aaron Rodgers, or is that coaching in your mind?
It's a combination of things. I mean, when I go back and watch the final Seattle games, you know, you see, everyone's always keeps asking me, who's to blame? Is it Schottenheimer? Is it Carroll? Is it Wilson? Is it the skill players? Is it the offensive line? Mm-hmm. And I say yes. I mean, it really, you know, there you see struggles across the board. Like, I did see, you know, you do see Wilson not just looking at passing up on checkdowns at times, and it's frustrating. You do see Tyler Lockett not getting yards after the catch where he should. You do see that pass protection, especially on the inside, breaking down. And then you do see, frankly, a lack of inventiveness in the passing game. It was all everyone's fault. And it's going to, like I said, it's going to take everyone to fix it. And do I think they're capable of it? Yes, because they have so much talent in Seattle. But it's going to take a concerted effort by not just the new offensive coordinator, but the head coach and the GM as well.
She is ESPN analyst Mina Kimes, a favorite of ours. Really, thank you so much for joining us today, Mina.
Anytime, guys.
Great stuff, Mina. Thank you.
I love having her on.
She's fun.
The best. All right, let's get to NFL headlines. I liked the answer about three words on the Seahawks OC, not Adam Gase.
Just please. Not
every Adam. Single person agrees with that right now. Literally, like maybe one Adam Gase person nodding. Like, wait a minute. Hang on. Get him in here.
I would love to see the one Adam Gase.
I would love to see that person. All right, the Steelers are planning to sign former first rounder quarterback Dwayne Haskins, according to SI's Albert Breer. What do you think of this fit in Pittsburgh, Jake?
What I think of the fit in Pittsburgh, to me, Stacey, as I look at Dwayne Haskins, he's at an interesting crossroads in his career. I believe that this could be a unique fit. What I'm wondering is, what does it signal? Does it signal that the Steelers are trying to look at Dwayne Haskins as a guy that could sit behind Roethlisberger for another year and then try and take over? Or is Dwayne Haskins the potential stopgap for Ben Roethlisberger retiring this year and moving on from his career, and now you're giving a former first-round pick in Dwayne Haskins an opportunity with a ton of talent around him to show that he can be a leader and that he can use his talent to the best of his abilities in a better, more stable organization. That is what I'm curious about right now when it comes to Dwayne Haskins. And I think that Dwayne, I hope, has been reflective of this process. And if he hasn't, then, man, I will be very, very frustrated, because you couldn't have messed that situation up anymore. I don't want to hear any excuses or any conversation about, well, the organization did Dwayne Haskins wrong. No. That was part of it, but Dwayne Haskins was the one that ultimately saw himself out the door. He made it very easy for a new regime under Ron Rivera to say, hey, this is not my quarterback. This is not the leadership that I want. And guess what? A lot of the players in that locker room, you lost them too. So this is on you. So you better be reflective and figure out how you can be much, much better in a change of scenery with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Steelers in a really interesting, unenviable situation with their cap. They're minus 26 mil under the cap right now. Some big decisions to make. Now, a lot of teams are in weird spots with the cap, right? A lot of teams have decisions, guys they're going to cut ties with, guys they might trade, guys that they're going to re-sign or let walk, whatever. So it's not this isn't permanent. They will make moves. But Ben Roethlisberger, a $41.2 million cap hit. That's 22.2% of the cap, which isn't, like, unheard of, but is a lot. But do you part ways with him when you're going to have 22.2 mil in dead cap space if you do that, or if he retires? And you also have the pieces around him. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be where they were the year before last, where you have a great defense, you've got lots of great pieces, you've got some great receiving weapons, and then just not the quarterback. Mm. Weird spot to be in. I do not envy that. Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski has been named Coach of the Year by the Pro Football Writers. I think this was expected. The turnaround he was able to do for the Cleveland Browns, won their first playoff game since, what was it, 1994?
Yeah.
Different world back then. It's been a while.
Well, it's not just the wins, losses. It's the complete culture rebuild that Kevin Stefanski has been able to do. I mean, that's the one thing that's been really impressive. And when you look at what happened under Freddie Kitchens, it was a debacle. I mean, there was no leadership within that organization when he was the head coach. And Stefanski turned that around real quick. And the defining moment is when he was immediately hired, Stacey. What did he do? He sat down Baker Mayfield in his office and he said, you're going to need to grow up. You're going to need to grow up. You're going to need to mature real fast, because I'm not going to hang around and wait for you to figure it out. Like, that to me was a defining moment. Now, that's not public, in terms of what exactly he said, but I can guarantee you that that's around the conversation that Stefanski had. I believe in you. I believe you have the talent, but you need to grow up. And you need to be the leader that this organization is going to require of you. And they were able to do that. Not a whole lot of drama that happened through the season. And I think that they're a franchise right now that isn't just set for, one nice year. They got to the playoffs and all of that. This is a organization that should be taken seriously at this point in terms of being one that can consistently be in the hunt for the playoffs.
I also have to say, there's a lot of bitterness in me, in that every time I see Nick Chubb, I think, could have been a Seahawk. Every time. Rips off a 60-yard run. Oh, could have been a Seahawk.
Yeah, that's a deep, dark place to be in.
Sad news coming out of the NFL this morning. Ted Thompson, former Green Bay Packers GM, who picked Aaron Rodgers, also drafted and set up their Super Bowl winning team. He spent time with the Seattle Seahawks as well, has passed away at the age of 68. His family in a release said he died at his home in Texas. I also read that at Lambeau, they are going to put up part of a plaque in his name. Obviously, the team honoring him moving forward, but what an impact he had, not just on that franchise, but on the NFL as a whole. Undoubtedly a man who will be missed.
Yeah, he will be missed and had a great impact in this game. And one of the very few rare personnel staff front office leaders that was able to go to a couple different organizations and have great success. I mean, you think about what he was able to do for Mike Holmgren. Mike Holmgren reportedly saying that when Ted Thompson arrived in Seattle, it calmed everything down. Mm-hmm. It made life so much easier on me, and our drafts were significantly better when Ted Thompson came into Seattle. And we were able to enjoy a tremendous run here during those years. And when Ted Thompson left in 2005, you saw all of that come together in that Super Bowl run. But then he goes on to Green Bay and does an incredible job. I mean, some of the impact legacy moves that he has made, Aaron Rodgers replacing Brett Favre, Devontae Adams. I mean, you look at some of the additions that he made or the drafts that he had, Aaron Rodgers, Greg Jennings, Jordy Nelson.
Built superstars.
B.J. Raji, who was one of the best interior linemen at the time, Clay Matthews, Randall Cobb. I mean, it's very, very impressive what he's been able to do there or what he was able to do there. And so he leaves a very strong legacy.
Yeah, condolences to the Thompson family as well with that one. The Eagles have hired former Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni as their head coach. Jake, you have mentioned him as a potential fit for Seattle's offensive coordinator position. He, Nate Hackett, was going to be a reach as a current OC, but alas, it is out of Seattle's reach completely. He becomes the Eagles' new head coach.
Yeah, you know, I think that for Nick Sirianni, this was a move that was very clear in the intention by the Eagles. This was a move. Hey, Nick Sirianni's had the chance to be under Frank Reich's tutelage. That was the guy that was that had Carson Wentz really dialed in 2017. And let's see if Nick Sirianni can help Carson Wentz get back to his former glory. I'm curious to see how that one plays out. But Nick Sirianni, yes, he was a candidate, in my opinion. I would have loved to have seen him interviewed here in Seattle, potentially being the OC here, because of that background with Frank Reich, with the opportunity to learn under him and create a really unique dynamic offense that attacked all three levels of the field, that was balanced in their run and pass. They've put together a very unique and creative offense in Indianapolis. So I'm hopeful for Carson Wentz's sake that this can work out, but everybody's crushing the Eagles right now for making this hire, because clearly it's about Carson Wentz. What do you want them to do?
Right.
They're stuck. You're not going to have somebody who makes $30-something million
carries dead
on
cap,
your cap. You can't trade him. No, I don't think anybody's going to want to trade him.
Nope.
So he's not going to sit on the bench. What do you want them to do? Yeah, they're going to go and try and run this back one more year to see if they can salvage this.
That's exactly right. Don't forget that if you miss the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. Now, as you guys know, we always do the hype train on Wednesdays. We had to push it back yesterday because we had a pair of fantastic guests agree to join us. So we're going to bring it back today. Time for the hype train. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Do you guys hear that? In the distance? Do you hear it, Jake? It sounds like...
What are you talking
about? It sounds like it's a train, and it's time for Hype Train.
What a lead.
Do you like it? I try. I do what I can.
Lead.
Thank you so much. This is where I read the, I'm going to say the top hype, where the hype is in sports. And we've got one random non-sports in here thrown in, courtesy of Jake. the top stories in the sports world. We're going to figure out whether or not we're buying in, we're getting on that hype train, or we're going to let it go on by. So first up in the station, we'll be talking about the Pac-12 commissioner, that new open role after the departure of Larry Scott, which they're pitching as a mutual decision. I'm going to go ahead and say
mutual.
Uh-huh, sure.
Interesting.
Mutual decision. Now, a couple names have been thrown around. One of them, Oliver Luck. So here's the hype train. Tell me whether or not you're buying on. It's a baby train. Just started yesterday. Oliver Luck is the best hire for the Pac-12 commissioner. I am boarding it. Jake?
Yeah, I am buying a ticket. I am hopping on board this train. Oliver Luck, to me, I've had the opportunity to meet him, be around him during my XFL time where I was thinking about it and tried out. Got a chance to meet Oliver Luck and talk with him. And
was he at the?
He was at the Seattle tryout. Yeah,
I saw him from afar.
Yes, but he's a guy that I think would bring tremendous leadership.
Yes, good job, Stacey.
Yeah, you spotted him. Good.
He's accidentally in the video I tried to make, the hype video. Curtis, are you boarding this train?
As someone who has also spoken to Oliver Luck in person on this show.
Right.
Is there only one person who hasn't spoken to him on this show?
So.
Well, I've spoken to other important people.
Okay.
So.
Okay, well.
whatever.
Yeah, I'm getting on this train. I think Oliver Luck would be a great hire no matter the position. The XFL folding, not his fault. He did an incredible job at what he did for that league, for that startup league. Made them matter, I think, in the world of sports for the short time that they were in existence. And then also he has an extensive history of working in college athletics. He was the athletic director at West Virginia, obviously his son, Andrew, having played football for so many years. Some guy. he's long since retired. Irrelevant. But, yeah, shout out to Oliver Luck. I think that would be a great hire. Really, anybody's got to be an improvement over Larry Scott.
Everyone aboard. That train leaves the station. Another enters. Head over to the NBA where, what's this? The Brooklyn Nets have won 4 of their last 5. That last one, a loss to Cleveland in overtime. So here's the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding it. The Nets are going to the NBA Finals. I'm dying on this mountain. I'm on this train. I decided to get on the train with the news of the Harden trade. Yep, here I am, and I'm not getting off. I don't care if they drop every single game. I will die on this train.
Oh, okay. That's very convincing. That's very convincing that it will happen.
Yeah.
Their one loss. They were on a 5-game streak when it was just Harden and Durant, and then you added Kyrie, and then they lose to the Cavaliers.
Well, in overtime.
You know,
it's a bad Cavaliers.
As I've said before, this is not a winning marriage. This
Absolutely.
Is not a championship winning marriage. And I don't believe that they'll get to the NBA Finals. Maybe they do if the Eastern Conference is that weak. If it is that weak, maybe they get in. But I think this will deteriorate very quickly over time.
I think your argument will. Curtis, are you getting on this train?
It all comes down to your boy. Now, their only competition in the Eastern Conference, that'd be the Milwaukee Bucks. I mean, that's pretty much it. It is the Nets and the Bucks for the Eastern Conference this season. Well, guess what happened this last week? The Nets beat the Bucks, and I think that continues this season. I'm getting on the train as well.
Jake alone at the station.
That's fine.
To him like we're in the 1920s. And,
bye.
That's perfectly fine.
We're going off to Boston.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
And in the 1920s, there were a lot of accidents that happened along the way.
Jake, whoa, that got really dark. Are you saying our train is going to crash?
Yes,
I am. That's really dark. Yeah. All right.
The Nets train is going to crash.
The Nets train is leaving the station to aboard. Next one up. Let's talk about another New York team, the New York Jets. They got their new coach. They got a new offensive coordinator. Let's see if they get a new quarterback. Here's the hype train. Tell me if you're getting on. The Jets should make a move for Deshaun Watson. I say yes. Absolutely make a move. You've got a ton of cap space. You've got a lot of draft capital. He is a generational talent, clearly unhappy in Houston. Yes.
I am actually not going to get on the hype train.
Why are you a hater?
I'm not a hater. I like Deshaun Watson a lot. But if I'm the Jets, Robert Saleh came out, and this is either great playing of chess. He came out and hyped up Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold is the guy. He's got the arm talent. He's got the pocket presence.
You would kill to have him.
Amazing Sam Darnold.
It's almost like you'd trade a great quarterback for him.
So he's either trying to hype him up and his belief system in him to build in some interest in terms of trade conversation for Sam Darnold, or Stacey, okay, he believes in what he is saying, and he's looking at all that draft capital that the Jets were able to acquire and said, I can work with Sam Darnold. I believe Mike LaFleur can be the answer for Sam Darnold and help him out. What we're going to do is we are going to fill a lot of the holes that are on this roster with the capital that we have, and we are going to build a legitimate team. You still have to build a team around your quarterback. Even as great of a quarterback as Deshaun Watson, the Jets would still be, from a roster talent situation, they would still be in a very, very difficult position. So I think draft capital and having all that is much more valuable to Robert Saleh.
Jake, you have made two great arguments, one about the Nets not making it to the finals, one about the Jets not making or shouldn't be making a move for Deshaun Watson. But 425 has a theory. I think Jake's scared of trains. Jake has refused to board both of these hype trains. Curtis, we are a show divided. Are you getting on this hype train or not? Should the Jets make a move for Deshaun Watson?
Boy,
I made a great argument.
You did.
I didn't, but it's a tempting train.
Let's see here.
It's a fun one.
Deshaun Watson, we know what he is, and I don't know if he's reached his ceiling quite yet.
You know who he could reach his ceiling with?
Who's that?
The Jets.
It's true. He could do that.
Let's make the Jets the most fun turnaround.
Let's say if you're the Jets and you get Justin Fields, who his ceiling, we don't know what it is. It could be limitless. You add him to multiple first-round draft picks over the next couple of seasons. That's pretty tempting as well. I'm going to let this train go by because I think the Jets have so much that they can do if they keep that pick at number two, get a quarterback like Justin Fields, and you just continue to build around him. And as we've seen over the last few years, if you want to win a Super Bowl, or at least get to a Super Bowl, you better hope your quarterback is on a rookie contract. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia had Carson Wentz in 2017. Pat Mahomes last year with Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, Seattle in 2013. You got to get a quarterback on his rookie deal.
All right, now Jake suggested one other one. We don't have time for it.
We have to get to this.
Okay, fine.
Not right now. I'm saying in the next segment.
No, we're getting to it right now. We are taking 5 seconds.
What?
Here's the hype train.
Takes longer than 5 seconds.
Well, then do you want to do it for what I need to know?
Yes.
Okay. Here's how we're going to play it instead. Next up, we are going to do what I need to know. Here's how it works. You text your question, what you need to know, to 710-710, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. What I need to know is, I don't know, what's the best outdoor game? The best outdoor game you can play, because Jake has an opinion. It could be questions about Seahawks free agency, OC, personal questions, anything you want to know, that's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Get those questions in for what I need to know, 710-710. That's the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Any question you want. We're going to go ahead and get started. Let's see. There is plenty of Seahawks ones. I do want to get to them. I'm going to start with this one because I feel it's personally the most important. What I need to know, what type of Doritos is your favorite? Wrong answers get you judged, though. That's the
favorite
Christian.
Doritos.
He said that. First of all, 3D. Secondly, the traditional nacho cheese is the best.
I still don't know why they got rid of 3D. Like, what went wrong? That's my question, because they were...
The world just wasn't ready for it.
Definitely in our generation, that was like the coolest thing ever, the 3D Doritos. But my favorite flavor, I go back and forth between nacho cheese and Cool Ranch, but I'll just say probably Cool Ranch is my favorite.
All right.
You're not going to give yours?
Wow.
You're just going to move on?
I said tradish nacho cheese.
Okay.
Yeah.
The real ones know that it's neither of those two, and that it is the spicy sweet chili Doritos.
Ooh.
Spicy sweet chili?
Purple bag. You're going to want that hotness in your life.
Okay.
They're so good.
I disagree.
They leave your breath stinking for days, but it's great.
You're not selling it.
It's great.
From the 360, what I need to know is, what's the best and quickest way to improve the offensive line? I think it's in free agency.
Yeah, there's no question. It is in free agency. And what I'll be curious to see is, what do they do? Do they try and sign back Ethan Posick as your center? Do you go after Alex Mack, who's 35 years old at this point, but still the very good center in this league? Do you try and draft one and acquire one? Because you have to address the left guard and the center position. So would you want a rookie left guard or a rookie center and acquire one of those two guys in the draft? I don't know. But there are Brandon Scherff, Joe Tooney? Is that what we ended up saying?
Joe Tooney. Yeah.
Joe Tooney is the guy that I want. Give me some Joe Tooney. If that was to happen at left guard, I would feel so much better about this offensive line heading into next year.
Now, I mentioned the best outdoor games because it was a hype train we were going to have. 360, what I want to know, best outdoor game? Bocce. They said jungle bocce, which is bocce with no out of bounds. Now,
bocce?
I said it was bocce ball. You had a different suggestion.
It does not surprise me. Life Alert Stacey playing bocce ball.
What's wrong with bocce ball? It's a great time. You get to eat and drink while you're playing a game? Hello? What are you talking about?
Bocce ball is not going to be it for me. We just got cornhole. My father-in-law just got cornhole. Okay. And we've been playing that a lot lately. It's been awesome. Like, to me, cornhole is definitely the best outdoor game. Played ladder ball. I've heard spike ball is really cool. I haven't played spike ball.
I've heard that's cool, too. I've never played it either. It looks like it's a game you play on the beach.
Yes.
In the sand.
Yeah, probably not on the grass or in the muddy grass here in Washington. But I think cornhole is that's the clear favorite here.
Best outdoor game.
Horseshoe. Someone was saying can jam. I'm not saying horseshoe, but that's an option. Can jam, is that like disc frisbee? I've never heard that before.
Disc golf? Know about that bocce ball disc life. Ball. Whatever.
It's cornhole.
It's bocce ball. Who would you guys choose? What I need to know, who would you choose for all-time Seahawks running back? They gave us two choices, Marshawn Lynch or Sean Alexander.
It's Marshawn Lynch. I mean, Sean Alexander, all-time great, right? But he played for literally the greatest offensive line. It would stack up against anybody.
Certainly
in
the best
NFL.
Left side of the offensive line
certainly.
Ever.
I mean, they literally could run left all day, every day. And there were holes, giant holes. Marshawn Lynch had to create a lot of stuff on his own. Like, you look at the Beastquake 2.0, there were a lot of runs that Marshawn Lynch had to make that were hard, hard yards after contact. That's what, when I evaluate a running back, that really stands out to me. So I think Marshawn Lynch is the best running back in franchise history.
Curtis, what's your vote?
Yeah, I got to go Marshawn. I mean, Sean Alexander was incredible at what he did, had over 100 touchdowns, I think nearly 10,000 yards. But if you put Marshawn Lynch behind that 05 offensive line, he's running for 2,500 yards and 40 touchdowns in one season.
What I need to
and
know...
And I don't disagree.
No, and I agree with both of you. 360, what I need to know, what's your ultimate breakfast menu and can you make it?
Ooh.
I'll say like a breakfast dish. Mine would be, I love a good eggs Benny with lots of sauce. Eggs that are medium, not too easy. Why are you laughing already?
You just finished it
instead
of cutting it off.
And also, I would also like either hash browns that are kind of like really extra crispy on the outside or some delish potatoes, not too much potato. I like a 50-50 or a 60-40 mix of skin and patat. No, I cannot make it. Why are you laughing?
Curtis, do you have that written down?
Yeah.
That's a long order right there. I was laughing at the fact that you called it Benny instead of Benedict.
Eggs and Benedict. A patat instead of a patat.
Yes. always trying to cut it short. But I'm going to go classic. Classic French toast, hands down. We were talking about pancakes and waffles the other day. To me, French toast is the superior of the three.
I could see that.
Bacon, I would say eggs over easy. With hash browns and you crack the egg over the hash browns. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking
about.
But
can you make it? That's the follow-up question.
Can I make it?
Yeah.
I could make the eggs and the hash brown. Well, yeah, I could make it. Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Brooke will probably hear that and be like, okay.
There's at least one member of the Heaps family will disagree.
My wife's listening to me going,
she's going to be like, can't wait for breakfast this weekend, Jake.
Okay.
So
looks like you're making breakfast for everybody. My perfect breakfast, I would say, is like a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich with like potatoes on the side. Oh, yeah. 360 says chicken fried steak. Yeah.
Mm.
If somebody else is making it for me, that is a lot
That's
of
a
effort
lot of
to
yes,
put
it
in
is.
For yourself. That's a ton. It's great, but 253, underrated. They say Portuguese sausage, rice, and eggs. I think that's like Loco Moco. Love that. That's good stuff, too.
What I need to know, does Stacey ruin a fine steak with steak sauce? What? But
No, answer the question first.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. No, my family would murder me.
Okay. All right. That's good to hear.
What a ridiculous question. I hope this is the same person that texted in saying their favorite fruit flavor was apple.
What's wrong with apple?
Are you five?
That's your favorite?
Whose favorite fruit?
It's like picking a Hershey bar as your favorite candy.
That's exactly what it is. If we are doing a fruit draft, who is taking with the number one pick apple? Apple. The Mitch Trubisky of first round fruit flavors. Just a disappointment.
Wrong. That is harsh for apple. There's nothing wrong with a good apple.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. What's really right with it?
Apple. What's really right with
it? Was this you texting in, Jake?
It's reliable. Well, if
reliable.
Apple.
What I want from the best fruit flavor.
Apple with fruit dip. Apple with fruit dip doesn't get much better than that. Oh, man.
Reliable flavor. It's awful.
Why are you trashing a good apple?
Why are you trashing the Nets?
Well, that's a whole entirely different story.
Sorry, doesn't Brooke make a fruit dip?
Yes.
It's like amazing.
I do have to have you guys taste that. Did I bring that in for you guys?
Maybe you should do it tomorrow. Maybe you should refresh our memories.
In a pre-COVID world, you brought it in.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I just had to remember.
All right. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. Curtis Rogers, producer and on the board. This has been Jake and Stacey. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob is next. This is 710 ESPN Seattle.